Okay, excellent. I am here with Dr. Carl McMillan. And Dr. McMillan has agreed to chat with me today here on the roundtable. We're going to be talking about this pandemic. And I actually found Dr. McMillan via Rashid Buttar's interview on BitChute with something like 100 doctors or so. And Dr. McMillan, if you could just give an intro on your background, credentials, and what you're doing now for work, your expertise, just for people who aren't familiar with your work, please.
Sure. So my name is Carl McMillan. I'm a dentist, a holistic dentist. I practice holistic and biological dentistry in Charlotte, just north of Charlotte, North Carolina, and in Raleigh. My expertise ranges from all facets of holistic dentistry, but mercury removal, safe mercury removal, cavitations, root canal removal, zirconia implants, and then, of course, your everyday dentistry.
Okay, excellent. And how long have you been practicing for, doctor?
Been in practice for 31 years, a long time,
Oh, wow.
and practiced since 1998 as a holistic biological dentist.
Okay, excellent. And let's just get into it, sir. What are your thoughts on this pandemic, and how has it affected your own work as far as dentistry, especially down in North Carolina? I don't know anybody down there, so if you want to just give people an idea of that situation there in North Carolina, and then how you kind of see this pandemic and how it's played out.
Okay, so here in North Carolina, we have a couple of what's deemed hot spots. The major cities, of course. Me personally, I don't know anybody personally that has had COVID-19. That doesn't mean that I don't know them, but I don't know of any, I mean, th that I don't know of anybody that has had it personally. You asked for my perspective on it. I have a mixed perspective. I definitely believe that the virus is real. However, I question the validity of all the things that we're doing around it. And that goes from masks to extra precautions. I find it interesting that we've not heard any reports of flu deaths in the US this year. And typically we have 30 to 80,000 people that die from the flu every year, and yet nobody's seemingly dying from the flu this year. How it's affected my work, we missed, because of state mandated shutdown, we missed 6 weeks of work. We have patients from both realms, over precautious to don't really care and want to just come in and have their work done. So it's balancing out at this point. For the people that cancel and say they're scared to come out, there are people that want to come in. So at this point, we're back to 90 plus percent, I would say, of our normal function. We've had to implement a few extra steps to, just to give people peace of mind more than anything. I'm not really sure that they were really necessary with all the things that dentistry in particular has been doing for years and years, since AIDS came around. We were, using PPE very typically in everyday procedures in the office anyway, and disinfecting surfaces and having disposables and all the things that we're doing now, dentistry was really doing since the 80s.
Yeah. And would you say there's a consensus o among other dentists you've talked to, or people you work with?
I would not say that there's a consensus in the general population of dentistry. Now, in the population of the world that I live in, the holistic and biological world, we mainly belong to three groups, and that's the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology, which I'm currently president of. We're a 1,200 member group, international group. And then the IABDM, International Association of Biological Dentistry and Medicine, and then the Holistic Dental Association. So those groups are really the groups that I belong to and converse with on a regular basis. But I have friends that are in traditional dentistry and medicine, and I'd say that the consensus is not a consensus, that it's scattered all over the place with what we should be doing, what we shouldn't be doing. But the consensus in my group of holistic dentists, biological dentists, is that we should, you know, assure people that we're taking precautions like we always have, but like we did for AIDS. I mean, nobody talks about AIDS anymore, but it's still out there. And yet we're being fear-mongered into, oh, stay at home, don't do this, don't get near anybody. And our group believes that, as a consensus, we believe that we should take some precautions, but it shouldn't be such that we stop living.
Right, yeah. And why do you think those kind of maybe excessive precautions are being taken? Do you think it's because why is that, do you think?
So there's first fear, even among professionals, they have fallen into the trap of fear, because there was such a scare of death at the outset. But now we know that death rates are really lower than certainly with flu, but most any other common diseases that we face. So among professionals, there's the fear of liability. If somebody, you know, came into an office and contracted COVID-19 after being there, is there a liability for us? I think as far as the overzealousness with precautions is because the majority of people are sheeple. They follow whatever is dictated on them without asking any questions. And that's one of the fall downs in medicine today, is we take things at face value, and instead of questioning and trying to figure out, really, does this make sense? I mean, as Dr. Buttar, I think you introduced me, as you found me through Dr. Buttar, he and I are friends, but as he's said many, many times, folks, viruses are viruses. They get transmitted. We have immune systems that we should be talking about bolstering our immune systems, just like we do during flu season. We shouldn't be talking about, oh, we've got to have a rapid vaccine immunization for it developed, or taking, you know, even antivirals. I mean, antivirals just suppress viruses. It doesn't make you immune. It's still there for us. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things to why the overzealousness of precautions, even in my profession in dentistry.
Yeah. Okay. And I've been in touch with other doctors as well, and I just had one back out of a chat, I think it was the day before yesterday, because of the fear of, I guess, getting doxxed or even losing their job.
Yeah. Which
I guess some people have. Like, I don't know if you saw that woman, or the, I think it's called the White Coat Summit in Houston. that happened recently, and I guess the one white woman who is speaking, she lost her job. So is that a fear that you have, or your colleagues have, or?
I'm sure that it's a fear that that traditional dentists and physicians have. I don't really have that fear. I mean, we are protecting people, even to an extreme that I don't believe is necessary, but does it hurt anything to overprotect? No, it doesn't. And it doesn't cost that much. It's gotten blown way out of proportion. So, I don't have any fear of losing my job because I'm self-employed, but I mean, obviously my ruling board, the North Carolina Dental Board, if I said something or did something that was out of context of what the general belief and guidelines from CDC and ADA are, then certainly they have the power to censor me or any of my colleagues. So there's always that fear, and there's the fear of being ostracized by our colleagues, and what I do has ostracized me anyway, because the general population of dentists don't believe in what I do.
And what do you do, sir?
Well, the general thing that I do, mercury removal safely, removal of root canal teeth because they're toxic, zirconia implants versus titanium, just non-considered mainstream dentistry. We look for the healthiest options, and most life promoting options for our patients.
Why is that controversial, or why does that kind of bifurcate philosophically among dentists?
Because we're trained so dogmatically that A is the way A is, and without question. For instance, when I was in dental school, I challenged the use of mercury fillings because the year before I started dental school, I was in organic chem lab, and we had a thermometer break, and they not only evacuated the lab, but they evacuated the entire floor of the science building because they had to have hazmat people come in to clean up half a gram of mercury, and we put a gram and a half to 2 grams in a lot of tea. And I say we, general dentists, historically have put anywhere from a half a gram to 2 grams of mercury in one tooth for a filling. So if we've got to evacuate a building and have hazmat come in and clean it up, but we're okay to put it in people's mouths, and we're dogmatically taught that, and then somebody goes against that thought process, that paradigm, then it's looked down on, to say the least.
Okay. So if I have fillings, doctor, does that mean I have mercury in my mouth more than likely?
If you have metal fillings, you absolutely have mercury in your mouth.
Okay. As opposed to the ones that kind of blend in?
Yeah, composite or porcelain are non-metallic. They don't have mercury.
Okay. I did not know that, actually. Why do you think they don't change that? Is that a harder question to answer? Is that a human nature question?
No, it's, well, I mean, yes, there is a human nature side of it, but there's more than that. We always have to follow money. And the last patent held on mercury amalgam is held by the ADA. And this is where we get into something that could get me censored. But when a patent's owned on a product and there might be fault with it, who wants that information to come out? So what we're going to see eventually is the younger group of dentists coming out. They're taught amalgam, but they're also taught more vigorously composite restorations, the alternative restorations, because they don't like the way that metal looks in our teeth. I mean, metal doesn't look like tooth structure. Yeah. So the younger group, they're going to dictate that amalgam, mercury fillings slowly fade away just by non-use, because everything's consumer driven. If the threshold for demand drops below what people can, manufacturers can manufacture it for and make a profit, then they're going to stop manufacturing it. So right. that's the hope, I think, in traditional dentistry, particularly in those in power. They want to see it just fade away quietly versus it being forced to be fade away because of health issues that it's caused or causing.
And what sort of health issues do you see it causing, if at all?
Oh, wow. We don't have enough time.
Okay.
If you could just do a
quick spark notes, you know, maybe 1-2 minutes.
Yeah. So mercury is the second most toxic element known to man. It's only second to radioactive uranium, which we call plutonium. So if it's the second most toxic element, and it has no biological pathway in the body, why do we use it? It boils down to that. Why do we use it? Why has it ever been used?
Why do you think, sir?
Well, to start with, it was used because of, and that was controversial, but it was used because of cost. The common person in the 1700s, 1800s couldn't afford to have a gold filling. That was the other alternative. So it allowed common people to be able to get restorations when they got a cavity. And so it got used. But even when it started being used, when it was introduced into the United States by the Crowcor brothers in New York City, there was a group of dentists known as the ASDA, I believe, American Society of Dental, let's see, ASDS, American Society of Dental Surgeons. And they made their membership sign a declaration that they would not place this poison into people's mouths. And lots of the membership dropped out because they wanted to be able to make money and they wanted to be able to place these restorations for the majority of people. So the ASDS got disbanded and was replaced by what we now know today as the ADA, the American Dental Association, which is pro-amalgam. So that controversy went away in the 1700s. And then was reintroduced by one of my mentors in the 1980s when he said, hold on, guys, time out. We're poisoning people. So it causes, just to give you a quick list, it's toxic to every cell in the body, but it causes toxicity to the detox pathways. It causes toxicity to the liver, to the kidneys, to the heart. There are many studies out. There's a study out of New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm going to tell you it was 20 years ago, but idiopathic cardiomyopathy, which is a fancy term for an unknown enlargement of the heart, people dying from that particular, I'm not going to call it a disease, but that particular pathology had up to 77,000 times more mercury in their heart muscle than people that died of other causes. So it can cause all host of ailments inclusive of neurodegenerative diseases. Wow. We call Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, all of those.
Wow. And going back to COVID, sir.
Yes, sir.
What do you think, or what would advice, because we're going to have people listening of all demographics as far as ages, would you advise them to do to, you know, just as a prophylactic for, you know, maybe not necessarily just COVID, but viruses in general? What are you doing per se?
So during flu season for years, and flu season is viral season, by the way, it's the most common viral season. I take extra vitamin C, always take zinc. Zinc is the key. And you've heard lots of news stories about hydroxychloroquine and zinc. Well, the zinc is the key because zinc stops replication of the virus. So if we can stop the replication, the immune system can kill. It's when rapid replication's happening that it takes over the body, the host, and becomes disease. So precautionary there, I would say zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D levels are so important to our immune system. And not many people are aware, but vitamin D also has to be taken in conjunction with, and nowadays you can get it in combination, but with K2, vitamin K2. Those are the main things. And then of course, I mean, cautiousness. I mean, we don't have to stop living, but you know, if with the flu, we know that we shouldn't cough in people's faces. I mean, just common sense. I mean, if you're sick, stay home. If you're feeling under the weather, stay home. If you're at risk, stay home if you can. If you're not, if you want to take those other precautions of wearing a mask, which masks don't really protect us, the wearer, from other people. It really protects other people from us. That's why surgeons started wearing masks during surgery, was to keep their breath, their bacteria out of open wounds. Yeah. So, you know, there are those things. I wouldn't go hog wild with alcohol-based disinfectants. That's toxic to the body as well.
Okay. So, even over the skin.
Yeah, absolutely. The skin is the most absorptive organ that we have. So, I mean, where does it go when it dries on the skin? It gets absorbed and goes into the body.
And why wouldn't you recommend of going overboard with that? And then what would be the alternative?
Yeah. So why not go overboard? Because it's ultimately, it has a cumulative effect, just like drinking ethyl alcohol, you know, any kind of hard liquor or beer or whatever, you can consume too much and it will override your body's ability to detox it and you get sick or pass out and so forth. Well, methyl alcohol, wood-based alcohol is what most of those hand sanitizers are made from, and it's toxic to the body. So it's toxic to the liver. You absorb, I mean, we're telling people to lather up all the time, wash your hands continuously. Well, A, it's toxic, but B, it kills good bugs as well. So we're killing our normal flora that compete with bad flora. So those are my main reasons.
Okay.
The alternative would be something natural like a nascent iodine or a molecular iodine that has been proven to kill SARS virus in 15 seconds or less. And it has a substantiative property, which means that it sticks to the skin and stays active for 6 to 12 hours, where that alcohol is absorbed within a couple minutes into the body.
And where can you get Nascent Iodine? Can you get it online?
You can get it online. And there's a company in South Florida called Iotech International. They have a consumer side of their website where you can order molecular iodine, which is edible. But it their tests have proven that it kills SARS virus in 15 seconds.
Oh, wow. And that's what you use, Dr.
McMillan? It is. It's what we use in our office and what we use personally.
Okay. Okay. And then that, and then would you recommend just regular hand soap washing too?
Absolutely.
Okay? Yeah.
Absolutely. Regular hand soap and water, but not excessively. I mean, if you've been somewhere and been exposed, then sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you mentioned vitamin K. It was K2, you
K2.
Said.
K2, yes.
Can you get that outside of just taking a vitamin? Can you get
yes.
it naturally?
Butter. And
okay.
Deep leafy greens.
Okay.
Some red meats.
Okay. Okay, excellent. And going back to COVID a bit, well, just to, I guess, to put the, you know, the icing on the cake, so to speak, any other general recommendations that we haven't gone over for the general population as far as?
Yeah, I would make a big recommendation that they not wear masks when they're not around other people. Rebreathing, I see people every day in their cars with mask on. Rebreathing your carbon dioxide that you're exhaling is not healthy. Your oxygen level drops to critical levels within about 10 minutes of wearing a mask. So wearing it the whole time you're out and about doing whatever, shopping or whatever, is not something I would advise. Now, if you feel like you're at risk or you want to protect yourself and you're around a group of people, sure, wear it. But as soon as you're away from people, get it off. Breathe air.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you think that the election is having a large effect on this situation?
Yes, I do. I've joked and said that I believe that COVID will mysteriously fade after November 3rd. I do believe that the election, and not just the election, I believe that the, boy, I got to pick my words here carefully, that the current opposition to the administration is so anti our current administration that they want fear and they want a struggling economy to continue in hopes that that will sway people to vote for change.
Okay. And do you think that if Miss Clinton won in 2016, we would be in this situation?
We would be in a much worse situation, I think, from a different perspective. But COVID may not even exist because Dr. Fauci would not have sent that research to continue in Wuhan from here in the U.S. because it was being done. That research on that SARS virus was being done here in the U.S. In fact, here in North Carolina before.
At Dietrich?
I'm sorry?
Was that at Fort Dietrich?
To my knowledge,
no, that's Maryland.
I don't know that it was at Fort Dietrich, but I know that part of that research was going on at UNC Chapel Hill.
Oh, okay. And that's your alma mater?
No, it's not.
Okay.
I'm a supporter for sure.
Okay. I'm kind of UNC blue, but
yeah, all that.
We got a question here, doctor, from Cynthia. She says, do you recommend nano silver?
So, yeah, I mean, it depends on the quality of the nano silver. Silver, colloidal silver as a whole is a great prevention ongoing, but the quality of it has to be very, very good. So the sourcing of it's important. There is new research and new silver out called pico or pico silver. It's just a, even a smaller particle size. Can be quite beneficial to aid the body. That's a tough subject to discuss just generally, but yes, I like silver in applications. In fact, we soak gauze when we do surgery. We soak it in silver, in colloidal silver, and pack our wounds with it.
Wow. Okay. And just going back to the question I asked before, just to clarify, if she did win, do you think that the economy would have stopped completely like it sort of has, or the restrictions would have been as stringent as they are?
With COVID still being the same?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I do think that it would have been pretty close to the same, if not worse, because when you have people in fear, you can control them. Just a quick aside. I mean, you look at all the riots in the cities that where there are riots, they're not in fear. They're not in fear of the disease. They're not in fear of the police, because the police have been said to back off or step back. And what are they doing? They're destroying property without any kind of discipline or arrest. And so when there's not fear, people don't listen, good or bad. They don't listen. And so one of the parts, the hidden parts of that platform that you're speaking of, is keeping people in fear, inclusive of inner city people. Unfortunately, they've been controlled and kept in fear and kept in a state of need, which keeps them voting for those same people that keep them there.
Mm. Okay. Got another question here, Doctor, from Venus. She says, do you recommend DMSO?
DMSO. Depends on what it's being recommended for. It's a great carrier for getting things into tissue. So yes, I do recommend it for certain things, but we have to be careful with what I say here of, do I just carte blanche recommend it? I wouldn't recommend it without somebody knowing what they're using it for.
Okay. Okay.
Gotcha. But it's a great carrier for medicines, to get into tissue if you're trying to drive things into tissue.
Okay. I had a couple questions about your profession before we get into that. Is there anything else you would like people to know about this virus and as it pertains to the science or the political situation?
Yeah. Again, we could talk all day just on the virus and on the science part of it. The science is still, there's no consensus on a true consensus on what should be done or what treatments should be used. What we do know is that it is mainly a lower respiratory attack causing inflammation in the lungs. And between me and your listeners, putting people on a ventilator is what killed most of those people. Putting pressure into something that is already highly inflamed makes it more inflamed. If they'd have just been put on slow infused oxygen, yeah, with no ventilator, and of course with some other treatments, they would have fared better. The numbers would have even been better. What was the other second part of your question?
Any science or political things you want to know just about the whole situation we're in?
Well, I think the political side of things is such a charged topic that we just have to keep in mind that no matter what side people are on, there's an agenda. And when there's an agenda, people will do almost anything.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Doc. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask some questions for young people who may be interested in becoming a dentist. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for people like that? Maybe things you wish you knew, or things about your profession that you want people to know before they do enter into dentistry school?
Yeah. That path? Yeah. So I didn't know I was going to go to dental school, even as far into college as my second year. I didn't know that I was going to go to dental school. But the one most important thing that I think about dentistry is that we should be people, love being around people, love conversing with people. In the kind of dentistry that I practice, I don't see 40 patients a day. I see 4 or 5, maybe, some days less. It's about spending time with people and knowing them and learning what it is they desire, and how I can help them, what's going on in their mouth and what's going on in their body, thus holistic. What's the connection, if any? And so I would encourage young people that are interested to really seek out dentists that they would like to shadow or observe work to see if it's something they're interested in and if they like people that much. Just a quick aside, I have a son that thought he was going to go to dental school, and I knew he didn't like people that much. And he's brilliant. He's a biochemist. He's a smart guy, but he does not like people. And he decided at the 11th hour that it wasn't for him. He just didn't think he could spend every day talking to people.
Yeah.
So I think it's important that people love people to be in the healthcare industry. If they don't, they're the sad stories that we hear, that people are miserable in their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that idea of holistic kind of looking at things, because, you know, I've had multiple experiences with doctors and where it's just like, they're either very arrogant or just very, kind of close-minded in a way that, like, they only look at it through one micro lens, right, as opposed to the macro situation, which I had this roommate in college, and he was kind of critical of me because he was like, well, you're not a doctor. And I was like, well, I know that, but I understand my body, you know, and I know what feels good to me, right? And so I've had situations where doctor's advice is just wrong, you know, and then that's hard for people to grasp, that someone in that sort of authority position, right, could be wrong for you. So
yeah, well, I think doctors are human beings. There's no way for any of us to know everything. I think you and I know the most about our own bodies. We should. There's a book written by a guy. I know him. Jordan Rubin is his name, but he wrote a book called Patient, Heal Thyself. Probably a decade and a half ago, maybe. But basically, he went through his, you know, journey through doctors and never got answers. And he finally just had to do enough research on his own to where he figured out what his body was telling him. And he started treating it as such, and he healed himself from a pretty serious disease process. And anyway, I think we should all be our own physicians. We should hire, you know, licensed physicians to help us. But if the physician says something to you, it just doesn't resonate. Mm-hmm. Listen to that inner voice. That inner voice knows so much more than that physician could ever know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you brought up that book, and I will list that in the comments. Do you have any other books that really affected your consciousness that you would like to recommend?
Well, my favorite book all times is a book written by James Allen, and it's called As a Man Thinketh.
Okay. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I'll read you. I've got a big plaque in my office, a big board that we put my favorite quote out of it in there. I'll read it to you right now. It says, "Mind is the master power that molds and makes, and man is mind, and evermore he takes the tool of thought, and shaping what he wills brings forth 1,000 joys, 1,000 ills. He thinks in secret and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass."
Oh, I like that. He thinks in secret and it comes to pass. Wow.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out.
It's a great book.
Yeah.
It was written in the, I want to say the 20s or the 30s, 1920s or 30s. But so there's that. My mentor wrote several books. It's All in Your Head by Hal Huggins. I love books. So there was a dentist in the late 1800s, early 1900s, Weston A. Price, and he wrote a book based on his research on nutrition and degenerative disease. It's one of my favorites. There's a whole bunch, but holistically, and holistic to me means so much more than some people poo-poo that and say that it's just a term, but I don't ever sit down with a patient and look at their teeth first. I talk to them about what's going on in their body, what they feel, what they think is going on, what kind of symptoms they have, because diseases are just named for the part of the body typically that's affected. They're not named for what the cause is. I mean, you know, we call scurvy, for instance, you know, it's a vitamin C deficiency, but it's scurvy is named because of bleeding. And it's lack of integrity in blood vessels because of loss of vitamin C. So anyway, we have to get to the cause of things, not just say, oh, you got a hole in that tooth, we need to drill it out and fix it. Why do you have a hole in that tooth? And it's typically not because somebody doesn't stand close enough to their toothbrush.
And we got about 5 minutes left here, Doctor. Do you have any final asks of the audience or invitations, maybe concepts or things you want people to mull over or look at?
Yeah, I would just invite people. I helped write a scientific review of the COVID literature we started it in March, April. But it's posted on the IAOMT.org website. There's a review of 91 COVID articles there that we reviewed and summarized, basically. I'm sorry, I got off on that, and I want to make sure that I answer your question. Can you repeat?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you have any final asks of the audience or invitations for people to look at things that you think are important.
Yeah. So I would look at that, and then I would look at always question money trails. You know, these vaccines that are being proposed for COVID, be careful. Watch where the money goes. And know that vaccine manufacturers are, they're exempt from being sued. So no matter what harm is done, you have to try to get money out of the government fund that was set up, but it's next to impossible. It's harder than beating an impeachment proceeding in the Senate. As our president did, but it's harder than that to get funds from that fund that was set up for damage done by vaccines. I'd encourage people to look up Andy Wakefield. Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Rashid Buttar. I would encourage people to question everything. Even I tell patients, don't believe me. Look it up, read, learn, trust your inner voice. If your inner voice resonates with what I'm telling you, great, let's move forward. But if it doesn't, run.
Okay, excellent, doctor. And before we sign off here, well, first, could you send me the link to those summaries that you did with your all the COVID articles?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
And I will link that in the description box. And then are you on social media? Do you have, we'll get a question here from Quadrex. Are you on Twitter or anything like that?
I am not.
You're not?
Unfortunately,
okay.
I don't want Big Brother following me with everything I do. So,
okay.
I am on, I've just joined Parler and I'm checking that out. Do you know Parler?
Yep. I joined it. I haven't logged on. I'm not on as much as I would like to be. I'm on Twitter a lot, but if you want to send me that, I can. If you're comfortable with it, I can put it in the description box as well.
Sure.
Okay. Excellent. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. McMillan, for chatting with me today. I really do want to extend my gratitude for that. It seems like the people listening have really got a lot out of it, and hopefully, you know, any young people who are thinking about dentistry get something out of this conversation.
Sure.
So I just wanted to thank you again for that.
Sure. Thanks for having me. And if you want to chat again, let me know.
Oh, I would love to, doctor. I would love to. Let's do it again sometime whenever you have time. So
okay.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll try to get them on again, Cynthia. And stay frosty, people, and stay well read. And